Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, we salute the champs. The New York Knicks have won a title. We talk about how they got there, the journey they went on. We also salute the San Antonio Spurs for an awesome run and look at some things that may be better or need to get better for them moving forward. Then we shift to the W side. More important, Commissioner's Cup play was played over the weekend. Awesome Aces-Lynx matchup. The Liberty have clinched the spot. We talk about the best teams in the league, and we project forward a little bit. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Monday. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great, ready to talk about some basketball, ready to talk about the New York Knicks as NBA champions, something that we have never said before.
This is true. It's been quite a long time since the New York Knicks raised the trophy, but they got it done over the weekend, Steve. A 94-90 victory for the New York Knicks over the San Antonio Spurs. Yet another game in which the Spurs set a tone early. Yet another game in which they had a fourth quarter lead. And yet another game in which the Knicks made big play after big play after big play to ultimately snatch victory away from the San Antonio Spurs. And to do so on the road was incredible. So, Steve, just to kind of open the conversation, what were some of your broader takeaways from the game five? And then we can kind of zoom out with the series from there.
No, we're talking about the New York Knicks. They're champions. We'll get to game five here in a second. I think you got to tip the cap to the New York Knicks as a total team for achieving this and this run that they put on to become NBA champions. One of the strongest playoff runs we've seen. And you could talk about who they played. You got to talk about how they played. And from the start of this playoff journey to the end of this playoff journey, the New York Knicks problem solved very quickly. And as a series wore on, they delivered more problems. Every single series, they figured out whatever task they needed to. And I think this is the beauty in the journey from the outside of a season, watching a champion go through it, the highs and lows of the regular season, to absorb moments where they're not playing as well, to find different heights, to make different tweaks, play different lineups. It embodies what the Knicks got as far as the payoff goes at the end, where everyone's bought in, everyone's doing their job. Everyone believes that they can have this level of success. You don't get that without going through the storm in the regular season. And so you got to salute the New York Knicks for their team play. And we're going to get to their team play. But before you get to their team play, you got to salute Jalen Brunson for what he did in this series, in this playoff run, time and time again, creating offense, creating pressure, delivering all the time. For a New York Knicks team that needed every single bucket he provided. It was, what, 45 points in a closeout game in the NBA Finals on the road?
On the road.
And they scored how many points as a team? 94. They needed every single one of those baskets. But I think when you look at what Jalen Brunson did in this series, and this ties into game five, but it ties into everything. He kept them steady. Flurries, punches, body blows, and they became important. You think real quick, I get to my spot, pull up two. I take a pull up three, that's fine. All right, leads 10. Knicks are hanging around. I hit another three real quick. I hit another two real quick. Knicks are hanging around. And as the game wore on, you saw he wasn't stopping. And he didn't care in this elimination game. And when you look at the totality of it, he poked at everything the San Antonio Spurs wanted to throw at him. He won different matchups. He was timely with his baskets. He was timely with making the Spurs pay with how they wanted to try and adjust defensively. Okay, you want to pressure me full court? You want to try and be aggressive off these handoffs? I might draw a foul. Now what? Now I'm cycling through matchups. You want a double? Well, let's take that off the board throughout this series. Are you sure you want Dylan Harper to guard me right now? Oh, is that Luke Kornet? Oh, Victor Wembanyama, come here. Are you at the level of the screen? Y'all pre-rotating? Are you switching? Let me attack this switch right now. And now this Spurs defense that had the Knicks in a box didn't quite have the same force as these games were on. and the Knicks were able mm-hmm. to find their flow, find dribble penetration. The effort was there from San Antonio, but now as the game goes on, ooh, we're late on a rotation. Ooh, now you get beat on a drive. Ooh, now two fly to the corner instead of nailing it like you did earlier in the game. And in the fourth quarter, you got to deal with a closer like Jalen Brunson. And as I was watching that game five, all my thoughts were in that second half was San Antonio, you need to score the basketball because this guy is sprinting toward a championship. That's exactly mm-hmm. what he did.
And he deserves all of the credit in the world for what he's meant to this Knicks offense all year long, really during the Knicks era, but particularly in this series and in that game five. I guess just to kind of zoom in on the five and then zoom back out. 45 for Jalen Brunson, 49 for the rest of his team is just kind of nuts in and of itself. And that's on top of how often he got to the line. As you mentioned already, Steve, the variety of shots that he was able to make, the timeliness of the shot making, as you already mentioned. But looking at that second half in particular, something that I was watching the game back yesterday and saw your tweets about it live as I was watching Aces Links. We'll get there later in the pod. But Mitch Johnson adjusted the rotation pattern. It's something that we talked about at the end of the Friday episode. Got these short breaks for Victor Wembanyama. Let's see if we can steal some time for him. Let's get him out. Let's sprinkle in a little bit more Luke Kornet. Let's make sure Wimby is fresher than he was at the end of game four. And it felt like any time the Spurs went to that to steal some time for Wimby while Jalen Brunson was still on the court, it was an even harder turbo button for Jalen Brunson in the half court and in transition. You really felt that in the fourth quarter with the transition attacks for Jalen Brunson. It's like, oh, I don't care about anyone that is going to be in front of me or anyone that you may have down here. You're not going to have a good time dealing with me. And then Wimby comes back in and showing on screen for the people that are watching on YouTube. The D-cell layup with Wimby trailing and getting that to go, I don't know if that is the most difficult shot that Jalen Brunson made in that game or in the series. It probably wasn't. It felt like one of the louder ones, though. It was the snapshot of, I know what you are and who you are. This moment is too big for me to pass up on. I am too locked in for you to stop me. I am not afraid of anyone or anything right now. It does not matter what the coverage is. It does not matter what the rotations are. It really doesn't matter who's on the floor at this point. I am getting to mine, in addition to the pull-ups that I can knock down on top of that. And so for this to be the door-slamming game for him, 45, to now average darn near 33 across the finals games, to slam the door in as many fourth quarters as he did, it's hard not to be impressed with what Jalen Brunson was able to put together. And I'll swing the rock from here, Steve, as we have the fourth quarter stats on screen for the YouTube folks. 13 points in the fourth quarter in game one. 7 points, 2 boards, an assist, and 2 steals in game two. 12 points, 3 rebounds, an assist, and a block in game three. 9 points, 2 boards, 2 assists in game four. And then 15 points in the fourth quarter of game five to flow into that 45-point game. And the last thing I want to mention, Steve, and I'll toss it to you, because I had you in my head as I was watching this game back yesterday. I remember you had tweeted before about the psychology or the science behind Jalen Brunson tweaking his ankle and then turning up after he tweaks his ankle. Sure enough, we get to the pull-up three that he knocks down against Victor Wembanyama. I'm still not sure how that wasn't a landing space foul. It's kind of wild. But from that moment on, Steve, 20 points for Jalen Brunson, 4 of 9 inside the arc, 12 of 13 from the free throw line. The Knicks won those minutes from Jalen Brunson from there on, plus 16 in 13 minutes and 50 seconds from that moment on. So great call for you. Great game for Jalen Brunson. Great series for Jalen Brunson.
I felt that for years, though. All this data, all these numbers, all these new metrics people come up with to try and measure success and efficiency. Can we talk about the overall boost that Jalen Brunson and the Knicks get every time he tweaks an ankle in the playoffs? For some reason, they just become a whole different team. I don't know what, there's no doubt about it. The tweet that you're talking about, I said on April 28th. That was like 2 or 3 series ago. It doesn't make any sense, but that's what the Knicks do. And I think for me, kind of just going back to the totality and the overall, and actually one more Brunson point, I'm sure we'll circle back to it, but he held up defensively. That was one of the biggest things in this series. The Spurs guards could not get to him. They tried. They wanted to put him in action. They wanted mm-hmm. to put him and Kat in action together. Did they spam it to the degree that most people would imagine? Probably not, but they tried to put him in action. Brunson was able to show and recover almost all series long. which is ironic considering we're off a Cleveland series where he tried showing the cover and Cleveland got him and then he had to switch. And so I think that ties into, one, him doing his job, two, the versatility and the effort for the Knicks to just kind of find a way and be moldable throughout this. And so of your two biggest concerns, you know, it's interesting to go with this Knicks team and watch them throughout the season check boxes off as far as your playoff concerns. They hadn't done it in the playoffs, but boy, I think they got something. I think there's a high ceiling and they're figuring some things out. Karl-Anthony Towns did his job defensively. I'm sure we'll talk about that. Jalen Brunson did his job defensively. And obviously you have Bridges, Hart, and Anunoby. You got some personnel that'll throw the Spurs guards for a loop. And so I think it was really key there. My mind goes to, even in this closeout game, Mike Brown having to deal with Karl-Anthony Towns foul trouble, having to deal with the Spurs just knocking, looking over towards the bench and be like, you know, we will do the Hakimich. Like, we will do that. Okay, well, fine. Guess we'll go small. Well, this small lineup doesn't work. We'll just try this variation of a small lineup. But that, you don't get to that kind of comfort if you don't have the buy-in of the roster and if you have not had a trial and error period. And that's where I think you got to give a tip of the cap to Mike Brown for what he got out of this team. We are not that far removed from the cycle of Mike Brown signs extension with Sacramento Kings, Mike Brown fired by Sacramento Kings. Well, Mike Brown's an NBA champion now. And the thing that he did this season, had an idea, had a mindset, wanted the team to play a certain way, understood the moments where he had to pull back and tie into what he had with this group, if that makes sense. Understood the moments where, okay, yeah, we want to have this kind of pace and tempo offensively. We might have to go pick and roll sometimes. We might have to establish Cat the elbow in the post or play through Cat as a hub. We might have to play different lineups. Everyone's yelling. There were 95 articles about the Knicks starting lineup. And Mike Brown was like, well, we might make a change. Did he? Not really. We might have to do it. But it was a collaborative effort. Mm-hmm. And you get to the playoffs, and each series they were able to do something different to get things going. It wasn't just one thing. You go back to Karl-Anthony Towns hub against the Hawks. Great movement, great flow. Now you got Brunson on top of that. We're getting them out of here. Well, team said, we don't want you to do that anymore. Still finding ways to mix that in, but we could still be effective in different ways. And that's where you get this group that came together in a strong way. OG Anunoby was fantastic as far as doing whatever they needed to for him to do defensively, nailing whatever switch, helping, defending whoever they needed him to, and then making timely shot after timely shot. Jalen Brunson gets all the salute in the world, but OG, boy, he had some backbreakers where teams defended for 18, 20 seconds, and then here comes OG Anunoby, bop, bop, bang. Karl-Anthony Towns is stamped. The discussion has changed. It's over. It's done. He's an NBA champion, and he was impactful without even having to look at a box score in the sense that he won drives when he needed to win drives. He nailed his defense when he had to nail his defense. He did his job. If I got to move the ball, I'm going to move the ball. You need me to space, I'll space. You need me to be around the short corner dunker spot, I'll be there. Mm-hmm. You don't do that and help your team win unless you have that championship mentality within you. Mikal Bridges had just pockets of the playoffs where he didn't miss for two or three games.
Sure did.
Landry Shamet shot, what, 90% from three in a conference finals? And then in a closeout game, I thought his knee was gone. He still let it fly. He still let it fly. Well, I'm open. I need to come out. Jordan Clarkson's contribution. You assume Jordan Clarkson would eventually be a microwave at some point for the Knicks. No, this is occasional bucket, and I'm just a try hard.
Loose balls, offensive rebounds. Yeah.
Whatever you need, I got it. Mitchell Robinson with probably one of the biggest offensive rebounds in Knicks history at this point, I would say.
Yeah.
To go ahead and help Knicks get in his position to steal this. Deuce McBride didn't have the finals he wanted, but he was huge for him. And Jose Alvarado, hey,
I'll do what you need.
Spark plug energy, whatever you need, I got it. That's the Knicks collective. That's the Knicks mindset. And that's what allowed the Knicks to become NBA champions. They did it together. It's team ball. It's team effort. It's doing whatever it takes to win a championship. And now whatever you thought about the Knicks, can't say it anymore. It's over. It's done. Kaput.
It's That could put, that's a good one. But no, like, it's funny, Steve, as peel the curtain back a little bit. And so as I was loading into the call to record this morning, normally you know, click on the link from the Google Doc to hop in to the VMix, whatever. And so hey, one of the
you,
old...
You're on all the business.
But yeah. But no, in all seriousness, one of the old Google Docs from this regular season is just kind of like saved as the top one when I tried to type it in before getting into the most recent one. And that Google Doc, Steve, is from January 23rd. It was a deep dive Friday that we did, aptly titled, What's Going On with the New York Knicks? This was about a month or so after they had the NBA Cup, but they were 8-11 since that Cup game. And it was just weird cat usage and productivity. It was up and down Jalen Brunson play. The wings were up sometimes. They were down sometimes. There were the lineup questions. We just had a conversation. Like, okay, what's going on? How much of this is fixable? How much of this is the stars? How much of this is defense dictating things, et cetera? And it is fascinating that we've gone from that point to them closing the regular season the way that they did, to having those opening games against the Atlanta Hawks, to then putting together literally slash statistically one of the most dominant playoff runs we have ever seen. This is where, like, to your overall point, Steve, the journey is important. The attempts during the regular season are important. We are going to try some things. It may not feel good right now, but they may be important for us later in the season. We're going to test out these lineups. We may lose on a random Tuesday, but we need to know that we can get to this. We need to know where our weak points are within these attempts. So if we need them later, we can get there. It's funny, like, as I follow, like, a bunch of Knicks fans and Knicks creators and media members and things like that, talking about OG at the five, it felt like everyone was just kind of waiting for Mike Brown to sprinkle that in during the regular season. And you got some patches of it, but it still wasn't a super high volume. You didn't get to this game five where Cat's in foul trouble and you don't know what you're going to get from Mitchell Robinson. And here's OG at the five with Josh Hart and Mikal Bridges and Landry Shamet and Jalen Brunson. In fact, after Aces Links, I turned that game on. I think it was Brunson, Deuce McBride, Shamet, Bridges, and Hart on the floor. I'm just like, wait, is this what I am turning into right now? How did we get here? Because I hadn't watched the game yet. But Mike Brown being willing to press those buttons, and as you already mentioned, being willing and adaptable with the offensive structure in particular. We can play through Cat. We can play through Brunson. We can ramp up the Brunson-Cat usage if we need to. It takes trust, it takes creativity. Mike Brown displayed all of it throughout this regular season run. Not that literally everything that he did worked, not that he was never, you know, worthy of criticism throughout the regular season for certain decisions, but like the overall process, the overall plan was a strong one. And you land here with the Knicks making this kind of run and being able to battle back in virtually every game this series as the Spurs would land the opening blow. But as you mentioned, Steve, like the buy-in is there. We know we can fight out of this. We also have someone on the sideline that can press the right buttons to help us get out of this. And like watching that come together the way that it did this postseason run was special for me. Also, quickly to your lineup point, very funny that the New York, I was just going to say the starting lineup, a plus 12.5 rating in the playoffs after all the regular season castration. And I was part of the chorus like, hey, this is an extended stretch where the Knicks are getting off to slow starts with this lineup. It may be time for some Deuce McBride. So for them to, again, in the postseason, a plus 12.5 net rating, elite defense, elite offense, this is why you lean on the trust of the group.
Yeah, that's why you got to keep the numbers in a certain part of the phrase. You can't leave it right in the front. You got to just kind of lean it to the side. I was looking back, and I had written about the Knicks at a certain point in the season where the defense didn't really feel good. People had some anxiety about the Knicks, which could be like one of several times during the season. But it was interesting because you laid out the good and the bad of the formula for the Knicks in which, okay, we're going to improve our offense. We're going to have some more pace and tempo. We're going to enhance things around Brunson and Cat and still get things going. Our defense just has hit a certain level. And you saw pockets of what it looked like when it did, and you saw exactly what happened when it didn't. And I think that stretch was so important for them because you have to have an understanding going into the playoffs. Okay, we can't hit this level. We can't hit our version of rock bottom. And so we got to give all the effort to make sure we are not this team. that is mm-hmm. giving the same kind of breakdowns, having the same troubles communicating, getting dinged on top of what teams are going to look to attack with Jalen Brunson and Karl-Anthony Towns. You never really felt that from the Knicks in this playoff series, and that's a credit to them. And I think overall with the Knicks, they were self-aware all season long, from Mike Brown to the roster. I think they understood they had to have the right mindset defensively if they wanted to hit their goals. And if they wanted to contend, the defense had to hit a certain level. Well, during this playoff run, that defense hit a certain level. How many times outside of the Atlanta Hawks series did you feel like they were in peril? There was maybe the one game against Philadelphia. I want to say game two, where Philadelphia sure had them in rotation, just didn't make any mm-hmm. shots. But after that, they just kept figuring things out. And having that kind of playoff game plan and zooming in on one opponent and building that base and having that versatility, those are things you need to make a deep playoff run. You got to learn the lessons during the regular season. You got to understand how to problem solve. Playoffs ain't about how good your team is. It's about, can you solve a problem in a hurry? And Knicks were able to lean into that identity, lean into that mindset. They found the consistency and they made the run. Mm-hmm. And for the first time since, what, 1973? The New York Knicks are NBA champions. I've never seen it in my lifetime. I saw them make the finals twice. Mm-hmm. Never saw them win it. Never saw it happen. So the Knicks are a testament that, you know, in basketball and life, your truth and your actions are always going to outweigh other people's words and perceptions. So you just have to go out there and get it done. And I think that to me is the lasting point of this run for the Knicks.
Yeah. Got it done. They did, to zoom out with this playoff run. 16-3, Steve. Per clean in the glass, a 122.6 offensive rating. That is the top number in the postseason. A 105.7 defensive rating. That is number one in the playoffs as well. And naturally, a plus 16.9 point differential, which is one of the highest that we have ever seen in a playoff run ever. J.R. Stamp, go ahead.
Now, real quick, I want to mention one thing, because I assume you were looking to transition to the Spurs. Is that correct?
Yeah. I had some quick Knicks thoughts from the game five, but yeah.
No, drop them, and then I'll drop mine, and then we'll keep moving.
Okay. No, I just wanted to say that second half in particular was just such a fever dream. And, like, the combination of Jalen Brunson, I am getting downhill all the time, with just random Mikal Bridges jumper, random Jordan Clarkson play, random Mitchell Robinson offensive rebound, random Landry Shamet threes, random OG Anunoby. Like, the collective of this group, it does not matter how good or bad of a game we are having. When we need to do something, we just have it. It was just impressive the entire run for me. It was impressive this entire series for me. Because there's just a not too far-fetched universe in which the Spurs win this series already, if they've closed the door on some of these games. Like, they had these leads. And the Knicks just said no time after time after time. And I know they're, and again, not to say that the Spurs are faultless in any of this, we're going to get to them soon, but you just have to have a certain mindset and a certain level of versatility, a certain level of belief to be able to pull off those kind of comebacks over and over and over again. And this is with Steve, and in the lead up to the finals, and I'll toss it back to you. I was talking about what this net rating and stuff was as the Knicks were on this awesome win streak. To go from, we are blasting the Sixers to close out this, we are blasting the Hawks to close out this series, we are blasting the Sixers to close out this series, we are blasting the Cleveland Cavaliers, to now every first quarter we are getting hit in the mouth. Like, that takes a certain level of adjustment, and they did it anyway.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned that. And I think this is where we tie things in. I have a quick point about the game five, a quick point about the series. Hopefully it all makes sense. If not, you just yell at me in your car or at your desk. It's fine. I have no problem absorbing that. I think one of the biggest things when you look at particularly that closeout game was just days and days of everyone talking about the Knicks being able to go at Victor Wembanyama. And the Knicks deciding to start that game and say, you know what, we're going at Victor Wembanyama. You got to go ahead and make an effort, big fella. And he sure did. Let me tell you, it looked like a block party to start that game. Didn't go in nearly as well. Okay, cool. I'll contain. I'll slide. I'll close back out. I'll get a block. There's nothing going on here. It's not the same drives y'all thought y'all had. We're mm-hmm. getting out of here. But there was a moment, I want to say 8:08 left in the first quarter, where I had like a fork in the road in my brain, right? Because I think mm-hmm. the important thing with basketball, from the outside in, we're always going to have the result that works in our favor. You got to think about what the attempts are and what the responses may be. That's when you really understand what's happening. And so it felt like for me, one of two things are going to happen. The Knicks are going to be so focused on trying to put Wimby in action to make him close out and guard. They're going to disrupt their offensive rhythm. They're going to put themselves in a tough spot. No one's going to have anything going. Mm-hmm. They shot 4-22 in the first quarter. On the flip side, I saw him take a deep breath. Now, I'm not doing the body language energy watch. There are very much other people that will do that. Salute. I'm here to fill a different lane.
There you go.
Boy, that's a lot of energy he had to spend in that first 3-4 minutes mm-hmm. of that game. And so are you just delivering a little bit of body blows and saying, all right, just know you're going to have to guard if you want to win this one. And so that back and forth of mine was key. And I think it ties into when you think about this series, history will probably not be kind. There will be a lot of labels attached to the Spurs team in this finals run because of the way that the Knicks won these games. But I think the Spurs ran into a New York Knicks team that was specifically ready to take what is the Spurs' current best shot. And so you talk about the first quarters. Think about these first quarters, Nikias. Game one, the Knicks shoot 8 of 24 in the first. Game two, they shoot 8 of 21. Game three, the Knicks shoot 8 of 19. I think it was their best one. The Spurs won that game. Game four, they shoot 5 of 17. Game five, they shoot 4 of 22. And they're in all of these games still. The type of defense that the Spurs came out with would, against a different team that maybe didn't take as many bumps as the Knicks had, maybe didn't have the same kind of level of belief, might send them scrambling. It might have been a whole lot of the game fours, but the Knicks were always able to hold strong, and that was key. Now, you add on top of it, Victor Wembanyama couldn't get to the bigs in the same way this series. You know, we mm-hmm. kind of talk about this, and you know, we talked to a friend of the show, Stewie, and I asked the question, does the drive set up the shot, or does the shot set up the drive? Did you feel like either of those things were on the table for Wimby for most of that series? Now, he played well. He didn't hit the levels he had against OKC. What was his consistent move? What was his consistent matchup? What was his consistent action? Where could he get the ball and you could say, okay, he's going to get this going? He had some pick and roll, short roll mid-range. He had some drives. He had some rolls. He had some threes. But was it with the same force that we had seen in the buildup to the Spurs getting to the finals? That's on top of the Knicks having the defensive personnel to make it tough on the Spurs guards. And Dylan Harper had an unbelievable series. De'Aaron Fox had a series that people are really talking about in a way that, not so sure we have to go that far. But he doesn't have his drives, and he's not making shots. Stephon Castle, as that series wore on past that game three, once his whistle changed to where a little bit of the physicality showed defensively, you're getting dinged a little bit. You're in a little bit of foul trouble. And then offensively, you turn that corner, blue jerseys or white jerseys meeting you. There is size, there in length. There's length, and you may or may not get this call. And so it bleeds into some of the problems the Spurs had consistently offensively. And so I tip the cap to the Knicks. It's also a lesson for the Spurs. It's an unfortunate lesson to learn on the grandest stage of them all, but it was a perfect storm to a degree.
Yeah, I think if you're going to learn the kind of lessons that the Spurs had to learn, yeah, I'll take learning them in the NBA Finals the first time this group makes the playoffs. I think I'm okay with that. I am not okay with losing. I'm not okay with blowing the amount of leads that they did in this series. And so, again, this is not that the Spurs do not deserve any level of criticism at all. We're going to get into the Spurs conversation. But, hey, man, our year, like I talked about this a couple of pods ago, Steve, looking through my preseason predictions, I had Thunder Spurs as a first round matchup. That was the conference finals. And the Spurs won on OKC's home floor to get to the NBA finals in year one. But to your point about the game five, I think process-wise, it certainly felt like Wemby wanted, or Wemby kind of felt like the shot had to open up the drives a little bit. I wish that was flipped more often than it was. Especially in this game five where you had the cat foul trouble, you would have liked to have seen, all right, I'm facing up, I am getting downhill, and I'm just forcing my way here. And I'm getting into some of these short jumpers versus some of the longer ones at the very least. That the game five felt like the time, again, with cat foul trouble in particular, hey, can we sprinkle more of the inverted stuff for Wemby back on the table? Whether it's Vassell screening for him off the ball or just sprinkling some like the ghost screens for him in pick and roll. Like, can we get to that a little more often than we did? Like, those are some quibbles that I had. But to your overarching point, Wemby didn't have a consistent thing. And with De'Aaron Fox not knocking down the same amount of shots, like, those are your two attention grabbers at the very least. From a game plan perspective, we don't want Wemby to get going, obviously. De'Aaron Fox at least has the pedigree. Like, we don't want him to get going either. If neither one of them puts consistent pressure on your defense, then you need the Dylan Harper performances versus it being a bonus to what you're already doing. You need these Stephon Castle drives to hit to a different level as opposed to it being a bonus for what you're doing. You need the Julian Champagne threes that you got in game five more than it being a bonus and making it more, you know, making life more difficult for the defense overall. And so I'm curious to see structurally what changes we may see from the Spurs offense heading into next season and what they learned in that regard. Is it going to be different actions to get Wemby closer to the basket? Or how much of that? I guess for me, my baseline question would be, assuming we see some shifts for the Spurs, not going to be a wholesale thing because, again, they just made the finals. But for whatever tweaks they make, how much of that is we can do some different design things to make life easier for our guards? And how much of this is just going to be Wemby is incredibly young. He's just going to get better / stronger. And so what we're already doing is going to be more effective in a similar bit for Dylan Harper, Stephon Castle, et cetera. Or for De'Aaron Fox, for that matter, if he's just healthier, do the drives hit to a different degree and everything just feels different offensively? Like, that is something that I'm just generally curious about with the San Antonio Spurs moving forward.
I mean, they have their mentality. Wembanyama is going to get better, and I think the whole Spurs team should get better for his experience. They'll have no choice if they want to get back to the goals that they want. I think they have to find balance. How many times in the NBA have we seen a defensive team play with this level of effort and activity and success on that end with that level of offensive hubris and flow and attack? And that aggression played to their advantage for a majority of the season, got them at times. And there were moments where they just went too quick. And there were moments where they just went too slow. And they had to learn that lesson. And that's the tough part. There were moments where the Knicks were storming back to a degree, hitting threes, and it was back and forth to a degree, and the Spurs are now just sprinting up the court. And, like, pace and tempo is important, but I'd rather you lean on some tempo in the half court than just thinking you got to get everything back in one shot, in one swing. Felt like they wanted to just end the run and the momentum every time they went up the court, which mindset-wise, I enjoy, but now you got to figure out how to be intentional. I think it's one of those things where you tried to find different pockets. And my mind goes to the fourth quarter where they started out just with that wide pin down. We're going to go double pick and roll out of it. It forced the Spurs to slow down. The unfortunate part is by that time, the game had changed a little bit. And so you had to have a certain level of success. The process felt better. You were more intentional about what you wanted. You're going to have to be more intentional to start plays, to get possessions. If you don't have a quick push, pull it out. Make a team defend something. Make them defend multiple actions. Because you're going to run into these teams, especially now you put a full season of success on tape, that are going to be more prepared for your flow, for your random drives, for your random brush screens, for your flares. So you're going to have to be able to get out of it and get to the second action, get to the third action, and put pressure on teams in a different way. You know what I mean? I think the Knicks took away their fastball. You know, we talked about the personnel with their probably quote-unquote top four players. Consistent size in the lane, size and length. They never really got to Brunson and Cat. They didn't have a thing that they could consistently rely on. And so that's where, as great as Dylan Harper was, okay, continue to build on that. Excuse me. Continue to build on that. But now, okay, how are you table setting? Because at any point did Dylan Harper's buckets develop into super help or two on the ball?
No, at least not consistently.
So that's where it's like, okay, learn how and when to dictate terms offensively. Learn how and when to be intentional. because in this series, in the moments where they were on offense searching, the Knicks were surging. And that put them in positions where they were not able to respond in the way they wanted to.
That was an absolute bar, my friend. I like that one. That's good stuff. I think while it's top of mind for me, as you mentioned, the Spurs not being able to consistently get to Brunson or Cat to kind of open the floodgates and give them something consistent to poke at. I was trying to pull up some of the pick and roll stats from the game five in particular. And you look at the series overall, it was three straight games for the San Antonio Spurs where they had Jalen Brunson as the pick and roll screener defender at least 20 times. And we talked about this on the Friday show after the first two games of the series, where it's like you made a similar point. They haven't really been able to get to Brunson yet. We get to the game three, they put him in action more than they had. It's like, okay, that's cool. In this game five, Steve, I think 21 picks defended by Brunson. It was under 0.7 points per possession on the trips. Like, it was the least effective game that they had in terms of the overall offensive production when they tried to put Jalen Brunson in action in that way. And so if you don't have that, it just gets a lot tougher for you. Conversely, you were talking earlier about Victor Wembanyama and the Knicks setting out to put him in action. First quarter of game five, 0.75 points per possession on trips featuring a pick and roll defended by Wimby. The next three quarters, Steve, 15 picks, 1.46 points per possession for the New York Knicks as that went on. And it's just like, well, that seems less than ideal when you also factor in, kind of bring it back home, what are you getting to consistently if you're the San Antonio Spurs, particularly in the half court? What exactly do you want to do? How effective can you do it? How consistently can you get to it? It wasn't really there. And the Knicks just having a guy in Jalen Brunson, where it's like, I don't really care what your coverage is. I can at least get to my spots. Whether I make the shot or not, the Knicks can bank on Jalen Brunson has the ball. He's likely not going to turn the ball over. We are getting a shot on goal. For the San Antonio Spurs, we may get a Fox drive. We don't know how deep it's going to be. It may be a turnover. Stephon Castle, as you mentioned, Steve, he may get deeper into the paint, but he may go up over two bodies, and it may be a miss, and that's a transition opportunity. Devin Vassell, like he felt like a timely shot maker throughout this postseason run, really. It feels very like Monday morning quarterback to be like, yeah, where were the shots for Devin Vassell? Like, I don't think that's particularly fair. But like, even with that, you would have liked to have some kind of off-ball element baked in for him to at least grease the wheels early in a possession offensively, more consistently. Didn't really have that going for you. And so it just it goes back to the central question that we had with the Spurs, where it's like, y'all are really good. You have been a top six, top seven offense all year long. But in the half court, what is the consistent thing? And I'm excited to see how they go about trying to develop that consistent thing, because that's, they just made the finals. Like, that feels like that's kind of, that is the biggest thing for them.
Now I hear it. And I think it's probably tightening things up defensively and probably making sure you have more versatility on your bench to a degree. I think there were elements where you were, especially I think game five, Mitch Johnson tried to be real intentional with, okay, we're trying to get longer stretches for Dylan Harper, De'Aaron Fox, you got a quicker hook. We're going to try and make sure we get more pockets for Wimby throughout the course so that he can have a surge energy-wise as it goes on, as opposed to the previous game where, okay, we have this lead, go ahead and Wimby take us home. Well, oh no, we're in a different game and you don't have the same juice. You know, could you have gone small? Can you have just different types of bigs who can kind of execute the same coverages, but also give you something that's a little bit different in case you're getting dinged? I think ultimately, when you talk about coaching, it's really easy to go with what worked, what was successful, what ended things, what was the adjustment that won the series. It's harder for people these days to recognize the attempts and understand what the what they're trying to do. Whenever you're making a decision as a coach, you are choosing something that has a consequence. You are picking a poison. And okay, if we go small, does that open up them to drive more? Does that open up offensive rebounding? Do we want to do that? Let's live with Luke Kornet, because we've done this all season. At least we feel like this may be more manageable. Didn't end up being that way. So those are the moments where it's like, okay, roster construction wise, can we just have more versatility to be able to do different things when Victor Wembanyama's not on the court? That's probably something they have to build. Now, me personally, just checked my email. I got the flyer. I will not be attending the Fire Mitch Johnson trade De'Aaron Fox bonanza that's going on. So sorry. I already have plans. Actually, cough, cough, cough. I'm sick. However, through this land of criticisms, I will say there are no guarantees in this league. And that task to return to the finals to try and win a championship is going to be tall, no pun intended. You got to think of all the players and all of the talent that is sitting on the sidelines watching the Knicks win. We have 8 different champions in 8 years for a reason. You got a shot if you build it right. The landscape always changes. And I'm sure we're TikToking. I already saw the tweet. Anyone could be traded. Who knows what's about to happen this week? We're getting close to that draft. The thing for the Spurs is you're not sneaking up on the league anymore. You're going to have everyone's attention. And I found it fascinating to watch people under and be like, well, why didn't they respect the Knicks? Why did they have this kind of basketball is built on confidence, Nikias. Basketball is built on a level of bravado. Basketball is built on a level of delusion. Basketball is built on belief. You want to break down these quotes between these games from the Spurs. What is the 62-win team that made the finals by winning 2 straight against Oklahoma City when down 3-2? What are they supposed to say? I would like to know the script. The same belief that we're crediting the Knicks for having, the Spurs had. You just get asked different questions when you're losing the series. The same way the Knicks weren't going to give the Spurs any material for fuel. The Spurs weren't going to back down. We can't be like, oh, you know what? Our goose is cooked. Can't do that. That's not how competition works. And I think when you look at the type of efforts that the Spurs came out with in each game, we mentioned the first quarter stats early. They were flying around defensively, but they were also attacking different things offensively throughout the course of the series. We talked about, hey, they need one thing. They poked at the Knicks in multiple first quarters saying, yep, this is what we're going to do. What are you going to do about it? Knicks hung around and found a way to win. But that's kind of the back and forth. And like, I think when we talk about coaching these days with so much data and so much information and having the results, there's a conviction that one simple tweak would have just fixed everything else that happened. And I get it, but it takes away from so many of the tiny battles that we saw within this series. It takes away from the back and forth that go into making these coaching decisions. Nikias, you sit there and you get really excited about a basketball game, right? And you go ahead and you type out a list of questions. And you're wondering, what's the team going to do? Do you know that coaches do that for just days on end? And then they meet and try and figure out the best possible solution? Do you know how difficult it is to sit there and worry about something, knowing exactly what's going to happen and watch it play out? That's the part that people don't think about. Just like, oh, well, how did y'all not know? We did. It sucked. It's awful. You feel terrible. I knew exactly what was going to happen, and we couldn't do anything about it. That no one sits there, because then people tend to not care. There's always a knowledge of the consequences that are going to happen. And through that, you have to grow. Mike Brown had to go through that. But Mike Brown's a champion, and I'm not making any disrespect. Right now, you can go online. There is a Kings fan and a Knicks fan with a fire Mike Brown tweet. I promise you. But here's the thing that y'all going to do. The fire the coach gimmick is fun, but y'all have now said every coach is bad to a degree. You're going to run out of names. You're putting yourself in a box, and I'm gonna sit back and I'm gonna laugh once we get to it. Because let me tell you, you didn't like what happened in Milwaukee at the end, now did you?
No. Oh dear. I guess while we're here and while we're on the Spurs portion, so I again did not watch Game 5 live, so I was watching Aces Links. So I watched the game back yesterday, and then in preparation for this podcast, I went down the rabbit hole of watching some of the Spurs tape from the 24-25 season with Wimby on the floor, particularly the defense for them. Because I, too, was just kind of annoyed by the volume of the Mitch Johnson piece. And again, there are some valid criticisms to make with Mitch Johnson in this series or throughout the playoff run. So I don't want to take that away from people. I'll get into some of those shortly. I had some quibbles, too. But I'm, like, looking at this defense in particular, Steve, and I was like, one, Wimby's insane, going back through some of the older clips. But it's like this shape-shifting Wimby's in a corner, and he's pointing, and we're moving around. They sprinkled some of that in. this just kind of became a base for them this season, which again is the first full season that Mitch Johnson has had with this group. He was not supposed to be in this position. And so he gets a full off season. His defense moving the way that it is. You get the year one of the Fox experience. You're implementing more Stephon Castle, Dylan Harper's in, et cetera. And this is top 10 team on both ends of the floor. One of the, if not literally not the best defensive league because OKC got there, but one of the most defenses that you had because of what Wimby did and the way that they dialed that up around that. I talked a lot about like the flares they were sprinkling in the offensive thing. We are going so far away from the plot of what Mitch Johnson did this year because the finals did not go well for him. And I do not like it. This is the biggest stage. So I understand why it is the way that it is. But like, he was just objectively a very good coach this season. He was a very good coach throughout the overall playoff run, in my opinion. I don't think the finals was very kind to him. And even that should be more of a conversation about what Mike Brown and the Knicks dictated versus Mitch Johnson, what you're doing. And now, again, in a literal sense, that does not mean Mitch Johnson was perfect in the series. Quick note, one thing that I tweeted about at the end of game five, you get to that final offensive possession for the Spurs. And Julian Champagne, I think, who was 4 of 8 from 3 at the time, not on the floor. And the Spurs needed a 3. And so I tweeted out, like, hey, wait, how do you not have Champagne on the floor right now? Like, I think it's 2 of the guards get Champagne out there because you need the extra floor spacing. Like, that is a quibble. That is not me saying Mitch Johnson does not know what he's doing. Mitch Johnson needs to be fired. Like, I don't understand why it has to go from 0 to 100 with these kind of things. And for all the talk about Mitch Johnson didn't adjust, there were so many tweaks that were made by Mitch Johnson throughout this series. A lot of them did not work because of how well the Knicks played. But there were tweaks, like as we were having the conversation about the Spurs offense, they dialed up different variations of pick and roll. They altered where Wimby was setting his screens. They altered some of the tempo of their offensive possessions. They went through different types of lineups without going full blown to like Harrison Barnes at the 5 because he felt like he couldn't get there. It's not like he did not press different buttons. The buttons not giving you the desired result does not mean that buttons were not pressed. They cycled through different defensive coverages against Jalen Brunson. Matter of fact, through the first 2 games of the series, Steve, we were having a conversation. I was like, hey, Brunson hasn't shot well. I don't feel like the Spurs have kind of landed on something that they're super comfortable with against them at the very least. And we saw how the series ends up playing out for Jalen Brunson. It's like, yeah, like he's trying to find the right formula for this. That does not mean that none of the decisions should be criticized, because that's not how basketball works and how analysis works. But to your point, Steve, something that you've been hammering, not just this year, but for years on this very podcast and on your personal timeline, understand what these coaches are trying to do at the very least. You do not have to like it. You do not have to agree. At least understand or try to understand what the logic behind some of this stuff is. If for no other reason, then your criticism will be stronger since you understand what the logic is. You can counter it better. If for no other reason, then to make your argument stronger, try to have the understanding of what's going on. And so I just don't like how we've gotten to, they got a move for Mitch Johnson after a finals berth in year one. And Mitch Johnson was like quite literally handpicked for this. Like it's given me so many shades of like the Eric Spoelstra thing during the Big Heat era. Where Pat Riley had to be like, well, no, he's not going anywhere. Y'all need to figure this out. And we see the coaching career that Eric Spoelstra has built out overall. I am not saying Mitch Johnson is going to become Spo, to be clear. But we do have some level of precedence for this, where it's like, let's give the guy that strong organization has handpicked as the ultimate successor and a guy that ultimately led you to the finals, let's give a little bit more room. I don't know if that's a hot take or not, but like it bugged me. It bugged me. Continues to bug me. We got to be more normal about these kind of things. I feel bad.
Well, normal is an abstract concept. We're all distinct individuals.
Yeah. Well, I guess when you put it that way, that is true. I guess more reasonable. Let's be a little more mild in how we talk about these things. But with that being said, obviously the Knicks deserve salute number one for winning the championship, doing so in the manner that they did. To kind of close this out, a lot of this was kind of baked into the Mitch Johnson rant, but a team this young, with a nucleus this young, having the second best in basketball per cleaning the glass, elite defense, elite offense, winning this amount of games, having the Thunder in a headlock for as many times as they did during the regular season, and then that also playing out through the conference finals. Their playoff run was a Portland team with defenders all over the place to give you the early test of the cross-matching and things that Wimby was going to see. Get the Minnesota Timberwolves. Anthony Edwards was not the healthiest version of himself, so that is an obvious caveat to bake in. But this is a team that has literally consecutive Western Conference Finals appearances. They know how to get to these stages. They know how playoff basketball works. You beat them, and then you beat the champs in year one. There should be a lot more of a positive spin to this Spurs season as we get away from the emotion of this series. And I hope that we ultimately get there. Because teams should just be kind of – the eyes should be wide open with the San Antonio Spurs moving forward. If this was year one of the
Here's the thing. Sky's the limit. You got a whole lot of talented teams looking to build a roof. Mm-hmm. And that's where the fun will happen next year.
All right. Well, I feel better after my rant. But in all seriousness, we're going to take a break from here. We're going to shift to the W after the break, where we had some pretty important Commissioner's Cup games over the weekend. Aces Lynx was awesome. The Liberty have clinched a spot. We're going to talk about the top teams in the league. We'll be back after this break. And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot as we shift to the W. Steve, recording on a Monday, which means we still have some Commissioner Cup games left on the schedule. Commissioner Cup play ending on Wednesday. We already have one team that's clinched a spot in the title game. That is the New York Liberty. We're going to get to them shortly. We now have a new leader in the clubhouse in the Western Conference. That is the Las Vegas Aces after a thrilling 197 victory over the Minnesota Lynx. So, Steve, just broadly speaking, where are you at with Commissioner Cup play? Fun weekend of games. What kind of pot for you?
I'm mentally preparing, Nikias. You see, because I have mentioned how competitive this league has been all season long, and the different identities that teams have had, the different efforts that they have given, and we sit here on a Monday towards the end of Commissioner's Cup play. No matter what the runs have been from the Lynx, the Wings, the Valkyries, the Fever, the Dream, we are staring at Liberty Aces. Once again, death taxes Liberty Aces doesn't change anything. And so the biggest thing for me was kind of what set you up here, but we're kind of starting to see beyond the Commissioner's Cup, we're starting to see some runs for some teams, and we're starting to see a little bit of separation. Not a ton. We're seeing some teams start to play with some force, start to figure out their identity, start to figure out exactly how they can impact the game on both ends of the floor. I mean, we talked about the Sparks, 3-game win streak. We talked about the Fever, 3-game win streak. We talked about the Valkyries. They've won 2 straight. Wings up and down a little bit. Dream trying to figure it out. Liberty have won 7 straight. Aces have won 6 straight. And we had that showdown this weekend between the Aces and the Lynx, which I think was an important marker to just put a stamp on. This is where we're at this portion of the season. We're not close to the halfway mark, but we're getting there. And these are two teams that have played at such a high level in different ways. And so I know you were excited for this one, and it was a heck of a ball game. What stood out to you from Aces Lynx? Was this the Aces kind of just throwing that card down on the table, just a reminder, this is what we do? Or is this the Lynx just delivering a little bit of a reminder? We can do different things against you, and we've got more coming.
I think the answer is yes. And, like, honestly, it kind of started with pregame for me, Steve, as Cheryl Reeve and Becky Hammon were kind of asked about just the history of these matchups over the last 2-3 years, because there have been some absolute bangers. And we also know, going back to last year, that 53-point win for the Lynx was just kind of like the landmark moment of the season. It was firmly a, hey, we are the best team in the league if we're Minnesota. It was also a, ooh, I hope Fee's okay, and I hope this isn't long-term. And for the Aces, it was just like, oh, y'all have been hovering around 500 pretty much all year long. This is rock bottom for you. And that was the jump-off point for a lot of people. Like, okay, they may just not turn this around if this is what it looks like against the best team in the league right now. And we know how the rest of the regular season went. We know who ends up winning the title there. And so, like, listening to both of these coaches talk about kind of the history of the matchups, both of them kind of downplay, well, it's not a rivalry. We just have a great amount of respect for them and the pressure they could put on us. We know we're both going to be looking at what the defense is going to look like in light of what our offenses are. And it's like, okay, nobody wants to say the thing, but everyone kind of wants to say the thing. And so I'm just even more excited about what the attempt was going to be. Go ahead.
I want you to keep going. But when I saw and kind of heard that vibe, it's like, yeah, we're not a rivalry. We both don't like the Liberty.
Well, when you put it that way, I think Cheryl Reeve still has some thoughts about that final. We will leave that there. But that then flows into the actual matchup. And heading into this, and I was like, as you know me well, Steve, I was like, wait, what are these matchups going to be like? Are they going to put Jackie Young on Olivia Miles? Are they going to go Chelsea Gray on Olivia Miles so they can switch a bunch? How are they going to deal? How are they going to dole out the matchups? For the Lynx, are you going to put Natasha Howard on Asia? Stronger, more strength-based. Nia Coffey, you roam off of Nalissa Smith, you protect the rim, etc. Or do you give Nia Coffey the assignment so Natasha Howard can do the same thing? What is this going to look like? And the first quarter of this basketball game was a whole lot of the Aces saying, we are bogging you down with these switches. You can try to post up, but we are like getting in front of Natasha Howard and playing that top shot. You're not going to have a good time. You are late in the clock and having to toss up some jumpers. We are forcing turnovers because you can't get into flow. And the Aces were able to play off of that. And it is so consistent with what they have been saying since 2022. As much offensive firepower that we have against different iterations of the group, we are at our best when we are able to play out of our defense, when we are able to set a tone and we execute our game plan and we play with the right amount of effort and intention and attention to detail. We can be disruptive. Our offense becomes easier. The offensive firepower really gets to pop. And so in that first quarter, watching the Lynx try to work through options, again, this isn't the first time that they've seen switches. This was the highest switch rate that Olivia Miles has seen in pick and roll all season long by a wide margin. Like the previous season high was around 23 or 24%. It was over 40% in this game from the Las Vegas Aces. It's like, okay, the offense seems bogged down. The Aces are flowing in transition. And even after made baskets, you're seeing a level of tempo and pace that the Aces are playing with. It's like, oh, they are really trying to attack this Lynx defense, which came into the game as easily the best team defensive team in the league in terms of defensive rating, putting pressure on them. But that was not the entire game, Steve. Before I keep going, I guess I'll toss the question to you. How did you feel about that opening stretch from Aces Lynx? How did you kind of absorb that start?
Well, I mean, I was overall intrigued, and this has kind of been my portion of thought with Olivia Miles based on this start. What is the attempt that teams are going to try and make? Who's going to try and mix coverages, or who's going to just say, this is what we're doing consistently throughout a game? How are you going to respond to it? And so I wasn't necessarily surprised that the Aces were going to lean on switching. I think the best form of the Aces is when they know exactly what they want to do defensively. And so win, lose, or draw, we're going to execute this, and then we're going to play out of whatever we're trying to do. The worst version of the Aces defensively is when they are in between. When they're not certain of exactly what they're going to do coverage-wise, you get a mix of, are we in drop, two on the ball, are we switching? That's where they are in the place that most people try to assign to them. I think they're a good defensive team. They have the bones of a good defensive team when they have their mindset and they have the ability to execute the game plan. And so I was keeping an eye on how they would treat Olivia Miles, and I've overall just tried to see, okay, who's going to find something that kind of just throws things off a little bit. No one has so far. But Olivia Miles is audacious, attacking, continues to find gaps. Fine, I'll figure it out. We're good to go. I think the most important thing for the Aces, if you take a peek into what they are as a team, the minute distribution was interesting as far as, okay, we're looking to win this game with our people. And so if we have to live with some of these shots we're giving up, we'll live with it. If we have to figure it out, we'll figure it out. But offensively, we know where we want to go. This felt like a decisive Aces game. May not be their best game of the season. May not have been their best performance of the season, but it felt like one of their more decisive, this is who we are type of games, which I think was an important message to send.
No, I think that part is – no, I like that, actually. That's good stuff from you. But no, I think I mostly agree with that. Like, again, it popped for me – the level of switching that we saw early, and then just the intention of pushing the pace after makes and misses, where it's like, okay, there is a level of intention here. Now, it also helps that Chelsea Gray currently owns the best three-point shot-making stretch or tied for it in WNBA history right now. Seeing the three-point volume perk up to this degree has been wild to watch. And, like, it's just, again, the ball isn't touching net sometimes. Forget rim. I'm just like, hey, she is really dialed in right now. So those supplementary buckets help, in addition to the Jackie Asia pick and roll heating back up, as we talked about last week. Those numbers are getting better. Melissa Smith could just randomly duck in for a bucket or just crush on the offensive glass, which is another thing I think popped for the Aces in this game. Steph Talbot crushing on the offensive glass. Melissa Smith crushing it on the offensive glass. Like, the wings in general are just giving the Aces extra bites at the apple. And so I've enjoyed that piece, and that's certainly something that popped in this particular game. The one thing I wanted to bounce off of, Steve. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was gonna throw one more at you, but it depends on what you're trying to bounce off of. What do you got? What do you got?
Just the Olivia Miles point about the coverages
Before you get to Olivia Miles, I want to point one thing out as far as my Aces decisive point. You know me. I love a good field goals made assist stat. Mm-hmm. And Lynx had 36 made field goals, 16 assists. The growth of Jackie Young as a decisive playmaker changes some of the math of this team. And Chelsea Gray once again reminding you, there are shots that I can and will not only take, but I will make. And there's not much you can do about that. That's a dynamic team that's hard to deal with. On top of having, you know, the MVP, Asia Wilson, and Melissa Smith, who is just firmly, oh, this is the assignment? I got it. Yeah, this is easy. You ever seen someone like summer school? And they're like, oh, I get it. This is a breeze. It's going to be a breeze. Like, Melissa Smith has figured this out. Like, yeah. Run hard, play defense, rim run, post, seal, rebound. Yeah, we're fine. I'll drive.
I will do all of those things. No, I like that. What I was going to say off of your point about teams that was going to mix coverages against Olivia Miles, it was fascinating to, like, one, watch that game, but then also flow into, you know, once the numbers were live on Second Spectrum, it was like, okay, what was the split actually? And so Olivia Miles, again, saw more switching than she had in any game this season in terms of the overall number, 22 picks. The Lynx scored a shade under 1.3 points per possession on those trips. And that was after that first quarter flurry. The Lynx did a better job of dinging the Aces in their switches. They weren't able to get to some of those fronts after the switches. Natasha Howard got going. And as we saw in the fourth quarter, sometimes Olivia Miles was like, okay, cool. What matchup do I want? You may be starting with Jackie Young on me. Actually, Steph Talbot, you come here. Actually, Asia Wilson, you come here. Let's have some fun with some of these drives. And woo boy, did Olivia Miles pull out some fun stuff in this game. But to that end, Steve, I guess to zoom back out, you saw the high volume switching. You did see the Aces switching some of these pick and rolls. And sometimes the big is just kind of hanging back, waiting to absorb the drive. Maybe it turns into a late switch or not. With Cheyenne Parker-Tyus in the game, you saw her just firmly get up to the level and try to chew up space. And I was like, okay, there is a mix here. You are seeing some drop, especially with some of those screens set at near half court. You are seeing some of the switches. You're seeing some of the nuance within the switching, particularly early on. And to watch Olivia Miles diagnose that as the game went on, I think is such a testament to how good she is and how smart she is. So you look at the box score, on one hand, career high 29 points per game, very efficient scoring game. On the other hand, bouncing off of the stat you mentioned, Steve, one assist, six turnovers for Olivia Miles. And a lot of those struggles came in that first half in terms of the turnovers. And so for her to not have her usual blend of the drives plus the playmaking, just the easy pick and roll reads, the pocket passes, the left-hand lasers, stuff like that. And to still find a way to dictate terms to that degree and then cycle through matchups at the end of the game, it goes back to your initial question. It was just like a, hey, we're here and we got more coming. That's where it comes in for me when it comes with the Minnesota Lynx. This is a game where six turnovers for Olivia Miles, Natasha Howard fouls out. You had the second half shot making in particular for Kayla McBride, but like the way that you felt her in that game was kind of up and down. It wasn't the same game that we've seen throughout the regular season for Courtney Williams. And the Lynx had a lead late in that basketball game. And this is without, again, no Nafisa Collier yet. And again, the Aces could also say, well, one, we won the game. Two, we had, I think, 8 minutes of Kennedy Carter. We're not super healthy yet. We haven't had Dane. Like, there's obvious room for growth for both of these teams, and that is both encouraging. It's exciting as a basketball fan. Also should be a little terrifying for the rest of the league if this is what these two teams can do on any given night without the full assortment.
No, I mean, I think it's fascinating. The Aces have been the top team to me based on what they've done in the past and based on what they've built so far this season on both ends of the floor. They're presenting a formula and an understanding that you have to beat them. And so they're putting themselves in the correct position for their talent and their ability. the links portion of it is real tough to deal with. Because here's the thing, right? Mm-hmm. You're telling me this team could potentially get back Nafisa Collier and Dorka Juhas, and now on top of the base they've laid so far early in the season, have a little bit more lineup versatility, be able to throw different things at teams, have a stronger base throughout. That's a hard thing to deal with. And so we talked about it last week. There are tiers. We'll talk about them at some point, but I think we're getting some separation near the top. I think the Aces and the Lynx mm-hmm. both have clearly stated, this is where we're at. This is what we're going to do. You got to take us out. There is mm-hmm. another team, though, Nikias. Mm-hmm. And I don't know mm-hmm. if you had any other Aces and Lynx thoughts, but there's another team that is firmly letting everyone know exactly what time it is.
We're back.
And that is the New York Liberty, Nikias, mm-hmm. who have won 7 consecutive games. And this is where the Liberty run gets fascinating to me particularly. I don't mm-hmm. know how the lineup shake out overall, but when you watch them play the Mystics, right, and they have Sabrina Ionescu back, but she's coming off the bench. So the Liberty are able to flow into, one, Marine Yohannes, go ahead and let it fly from the start. Jonquil gets some drives. Stewie, when you're spaced, the Stewie, I'm spaced, but I'm actually just going to set this up for a drive and hit you and we'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. Then defensively, I'm going to do whatever I want and just roam around and figure things out. But the fact that the Liberty were able to flow into, as the game progressed, actually, it's Sabrina, it's Stewie, it's Jonquil, it's Satu. It's not how that's supposed to work. And no. So some of the combinations that they can kind of figure out, it gets really interesting to me. And I think it's a team where I don't think they've hit their highest level, but I think they're mm-hmm. figuring out the base a little bit more. And so you talked about how important the defense is. You're starting to feel Stewie's impact again. Weak side mm-hmm. help's been huge. Jonquil roaming around. Weak side help's been huge. Activity's been great. But that ball is starting to move. And there's an understanding and a desire to just kind of keep things flowing. 28 made field goals, 22 assists against the Mystics. They felt a comfort offensively as far as flowing through their actions, getting to different things. When you go up and down the roster, it feels like everyone knows what their job is. Mm-hmm. And no one feels, maybe outside of the bigs, no one feels overtasked to a degree. Marine, just go be yourself. Paulie and Astier, get downhill, play defense.
Or try at
least. We've seen Sabrina for 2 games. we like Hanzu, yes. Let it fly. Side note, it's time to respect Hanzu, by the way. Time to acknowledge that. But Satu being able to kind of find a rhythm throughout. I think the Liberty are setting themselves up to become something where it's like, ooh, did you know what the ceiling of this was? And that, to me, is what this stretch has felt like.
No, I'm right there with you. So before I directly respond to what you said, to set the table on what the New York Liberty have done during the 7-game win streak, a 110.8 offensive rating, which would be a top 3 mark in the league overall, a 95.5 defensive rating. And to put that into perspective, Steve, the Minnesota Lynx have the best defensive rating in the league overall this season at 98.9. They're nearly 4 points better than the best defense in basketball right now. It's where we're at with the New York Liberty. A plus 15.3 net rating. They are getting to the free throw line on nearly 39% of their possessions during this stretch. So even when they don't have the shot making, you got to deal with them on the offensive glass and they're hacking. You got to hack them, otherwise they're finishing. Breanna Stewart is absolutely going to get downhill to get to the line as she has all year long. So that's been first across the league. And then the opponent effective field goal percentage, which also just kind of factors in the math difference between 2s and 3s at 46%. That is also the stingiest mark in basketball. And that is tied to the collective size that this Liberty group has. Talked about their zone last week, so I won't hang there too long, but it is incredibly rude that you could just have multiple versions of a 6'2 or taller player at the top of your zone or pressing you first and then flowing into the zone. And it just kind of shape shifts from there. Like the zone possessions they're sprinkling in with, like Hanzu was in a corner instead of in the middle. I'm just like, wait a minute. What are you supposed to do with that? Like, yes, in theory, let's beat her off the closeout. Who are you driving into if you beat Hanzu from the corner? another tall person with long arms that is better defensively. Like, that's not how any of that is supposed to work for the Liberty. And because they're able to get these stops, and like, that's the scary part. They're just getting stops. I was looking at some of the four factor stuff for them. It's not like they're forcing a bunch of turnovers. This is firmly, you are in a box and you are missing shots. And we get the flow from there. If we get to a point to where, especially when you get to like the top of the zone and that kind of fun, if we get to the point to where they're legitimately generating a bunch of deflections and steals on top of all of this, that offensive rate is going to go from like 111 to 114, 115 or something like that. Like, there is room for more here within what they're doing defensively. But their shell itself in man, like, they can mix in the switching if they want to. They can ask their guards to navigate. They can get pretty audacious with some of the nail help that they want to show, depending on who's up there. Leone Feverish in particular doesn't mind swiping down. And it's like, where do you go? And if you win a matchup, it is Jonquel or it's Breanna Stewart, which, hey, if I could pause with the Stewie portion very quickly, Steve.
Yeah, talk about it. Talk about it. Talk about it.
That Mystics performance, like, it's rude in one sense because the Mystics, their offense, there is room for growth. We will put it that way. Right.
Oh, interesting.
But the way... You know how I feel about their spacing principles, but like, the shooting talent is what it is. The way that Breanna Stewart erased shot after shot after shot after shot after shot after shot after shot, that is seven, because she had seven blocks in this basketball game and altered many other shots just because she can roam. And it would be one thing if it was just Stewie, you defend a non-shooter, park near the basket. Oh, no, 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 Steve. I'm at the top of the zone sometimes. Other times, just cross match with a guard. Sometimes I am just defending a big. Other times, this is just helping off within the natural rotations that New York wants to get to. She is insane as a defender. She has been insane as a defender for a very long time. And watching the way that she just completely shut down the Mystics for large stretches of the game, particularly in the first half, I'm just like, hey, people need to remember who Breanna Stewart is on the defensive end of the floor, because that's not what that's supposed to look like.
I've never understood how people forget. She's the heartbeat.
She does it all the time.
In so many different ways. This team is elevated because of the versatility that she has. And when you have a performance like that, where I know you guys want to post up, I know you guys want to drive, I'm taking this off the board, it makes things real hard. So Liberty moving in the right direction. Do you have any other Liberty thoughts? Because it's interesting to hear you kind of just, you know, expound on Stewie's impact for Liberty's defense. Feels like something I've preached on this pod for a little bit. Do you have any other Liberty thoughts before I got to my next thought, my next statement, dear friend?
The setup here is killing me. I would just say very quickly, because you mentioned Satu Sabli a little bit earlier, as she is still coming off the bench for the New York Liberty. They force misses, and then she is just streaking down the middle of the floor, and there are not many players in the league that could deal with a ceiling Satu. That seems unfair, especially when you get into some of these hybrid lineups that the Liberty are facing, because Satu is coming in off the bench, so she's seeing other bench pieces. That seems unfair. And then on top of that, Steve, I like half jokingly tweeted like the other game, where I'm just like, I'm not falling for the Satu threes again, but it is cool that she's knocking these down. I think it was the Dream game. She does just continue to knock these down. And so regardless of, independent of how I feel about it, if it is a mix of post seal, drive, also you're ducking under my handoff or screen, and I'm just pulling and knocking these down. Like, 40% from three is just 40% from three at a certain point. And like, the fact that she is knocking these down to this degree, it just adds an extra punch to this New York Liberty offense, to which, as you already mentioned, Maureen Yohannes can just get going from three whenever she wants to. And she has the playmaking on top of that. Pauline Astier could just beat pretty much anyone 1v1, it feels like. She will burst or craft her way to baskets at the rim. Stewie can flow a little bit everywhere. Jonquel, the mix of the drives, the pick and pops, just the spot ups for her, the inverted pick and roll that they continue to sprinkle in for her, that teams are still trying to figure out what exactly we want to do with this. And now you have the Satu wave. And now Sabrina Ionescu is coming back, and she's going to work her way back into rhythm at some point. Hey, this is a very dangerous Liberty group if they are healthy. They're a very dangerous group right now, based on the winning and the way that they're winning right now. So that's where I would cap it right now, Steve. But please continue.
He's done it again, folks. So if you're a long-term dunker, you heard this from Nekias Duncan last year. And since we're doing long-term bits here, Nekias, how long are we doing this podcast?
Over 5 years at this point.
Interesting. Now, you wrote a tremendous article about potential WNBA MVP candidates. And it's very interesting in the time that we've done this podcast. For many years, myself, Steve, has tried to tell you the hashtag is indeed MB Plum. And you have very much told me it's not, over and over and over and over again. Now, imagine my surprise. I'm sitting there on Friday afternoon, got a bowl of soup, got a sandwich in my hand. I click on this article. Let's see what my guy wrote about. Is that Kelsey Plum's name as an MVP candidate? So you're telling me the hashtag is MB Plum now all of a sudden. That's interesting to me. 43 points for the Los Angeles Sparks on Friday. Just a reminder of the engine that Kelsey Plum can be. I wanted to ask you how you felt about that, but I also want to point out, very funny, you remember last year where like the Sparks had like the second most road wins for like 3 weeks late in that season?
Yeah,
they're doing it again, Nekias. They're 2-5 at home. They're 5-1 on the road. But they're competing. So I just want to take my remaining time and get you to acknowledge that maybe this hashtag might actually have some life, buddy.
Well, I put it this way, Steve. I guess two things quickly. One, if Kelsey Plum is going to do this, where it's essentially 27-7, on 66-41-81 shooting splits, yes, she absolutely deserves to be in the conversation. Now, the half bit that I will respond to on this portion, as you have been a person that has brought up hashtag MV Plum throughout the history of this podcast, my pushback on that primarily has not been that Kelsey Plum is not good. It's more that Kelsey Plum, especially at the time that you introduced the hashtag, was on the same team with Asia Wilson. And it is just very hard for me to build out an MVP case for someone who is like capped as the second best player on their team. So now that Kelsey Plum is a Spark and she is the best player on her team, it is a lot easier to be like, hey, Kelsey Plum is the engine of this because she is quite literally the engine of this.
Nah, you gotta see it early. Realize.
You are not a serious human being. I hope people realize what the Los Angeles Sparks are doing right now. As you mentioned earlier in the episode, they have won 3 straight games, Steve. And while the defense still isn't quite where they want it to be, at least consistently, you are starting to see longer stretches of the defense hitting the way you want it to. You're seeing Neck up at the level. It's like, oh, this gets kind of fun. You see Ray Burrell feeling a little better on the perimeter. It's been like a weird start for her defensively this season. But I think she's getting there. When Cam Brink comes in, teams are not having a good time dealing with her. And if she stays on the floor, those are just longer stretches of teams not having a good time dealing with her. And I've already talked about how I felt about the Ariel Atkins defensive season so far this year. They've asked her to defend a little bit of everyone. She's been good on and off the ball for me. And so if they just hit a certain baseline of defense consistently, we have the early sample of what this offense can be. Now, is Kelsey Plum going to convert 66% of her twos for this entire season? Like, probably not. But she is going to be an efficient paint scorer. And like, in general, the pressure that she puts on you as a driver primarily, because I think she is just the best driver in basketball, with all due respect to the other elite drivers that we have in the W, it is just Kelsey Plum. If she has that consistent rim pressure, can knock down shots, you put two on the ball against her, and now it's Neko or De'Erica getting to make short roll reads. You mix in the cutting that they want to sprinkle in. And then on the other end, you're dealing with Ariel, you're dealing with the length of Ray Burrell, you're dealing with the activity of Neko Gumake. When you sub in Cam Brink, you're dealing with that rim protection on top of that. Like, this is what the formula is supposed to be for the Sparks group. And so it has been intriguing to me that they're starting to get closer to it. They're not all the way there yet, though of course they take the wins where they can. But it is getting closer. And you zoom out, like, Kelsey Plum is just spearheading all of this. She has been incredible to start this season. And she deserves a lot of credit for what she's doing so far this year.
We did it, folks. That's all I needed. That's all I needed. So we can get out of here. That's what I'm saying. And there's a lot of good W action come this week. So we may or may not hit you with some tears later this week based on what happens. Mm-hmm. A lot of games happening on Wednesday. When Nikias tried to tell you about that like 2 weeks
ago, I tried to warn you.
Like, it's the end of the Commissioner's Cup. It's kind of how it works. But yeah, let's get this going. It's returning the corner and things are going to get real fun real soon, Nikias. I just had to make sure that I got that on wax early in June. Let's go, baby.
Fantastic. The only thing I'll add, then we can get out of here. Talk about the matchups that we have coming up this week. Later on tonight, Steve, we get Aces Wings, which one, Paige Baker expected to be healthy for that one, so that should just be a fun time. But within the lens of the Commissioner's Cup, if the Aces win, they have clinched a spot in the West. If the Aces do not win, the door is still briefly open. I think the Lynx, with their one loss, the Aces will have to lose out. They have to lose tonight and then lose to the Mercury on Wednesday. The Lynx will have to win out to still get the Western Conference slot in the Commissioner's Cup. So we'll keep an eye on that, but very excited to see what Aces Wings looks like. That should be a good time. And with that, thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports main YouTube channel. That's where our W content will live. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel. That is where our finals coverage was and where our NBA coverage will continue as we get into some offseason things, draft coming up. We're not too far away from summer league, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to get some star trades at some point, so we'll have a lot to talk about, but subscribe to that as well. You can follow me on socials at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.